Who do you think you are, standing against me? Someone who refuses to watch a bully destroy an innocent girl? Please, I never meant to cause trouble.
Society called her a ghost, a girl so entirely unremarkable she blended into the damask wallpaper of Mayfair's grandest ballrooms. But the night she stood between London's cruelest debutante and the terrified sister of the formidable Duke of Rothmere, the wallflower didn't just bloom, she drew blood. In the glittering, unforgiving crucible of London High Society in the spring of 1814, visibility was a currency. Those who possessed it were draped in the finest silks, courted by heirs, and immortalized in the scandalous gossip columns of the Morning Post. Those who lacked it were condemned to the edges of the ballroom, nursing lukewarm lemon water and waiting for the season to end. Clara Danvers was exceptionally wealthy in her invisibility. At 23, the daughter of the reclusive Viscount Danvers was firmly entrenched in her third season. She was not terribly plain, nor was she strikingly beautiful. She possessed an intelligent, heart-shaped face, a smattering of pale freckles across her nose, and intelligent hazel eyes that missed absolutely nothing. However, under the tyrannical guidance of her frugal aunt, Mrs. Agatha Linfield, Clara was perpetually dressed in muted shades of sage, dove gray, and an unfortunate mustard yellow that washed out her complexion. She was the quintessential wallflower, a fixture of the perimeter, as reliable and overlooked as the potted ferns. Yet, there was power in being ignored. Because no one looked at Clara, no one guarded their tongues around her. She knew that Lord Harrington was secretly facing ruin from gambling debts in Newmarket. She knew that the supposedly pious Lady Penelope was conducting a torrid affair with her riding instructor. And she knew that Alistair Cavendish, the Duke of Rothmere, was entirely unapproachable. Alistair Cavendish was a man carved from ice and obsidian. At 30 years of age, he possessed a staggering fortune, a sprawling estate in Derbyshire, and a reputation that made grown men tremble in the halls of Parliament. He had inherited the dukedom amidst a quiet storm of his late father's scandalous financial mismanagement. Through sheer, ruthless will and a heart encased in frost, Alistair had resurrected the Cavendish name, destroying rivals without a second thought. In the House of Lords, he aligned with Lord Castlereagh, wielding his political influence like a broadsword. He was universally respected, deeply feared, and entirely devoid of warmth. When the Duke of Rothmere entered a room, the temperature plummeted. He did not dance. He did not engage in idle banter. He observed the matrimonial mart of the ton with the clinical detachment of a general inspecting infantry. It was widely understood that when Rothmere finally chose a duchess, it would be a cold calculation of pedigree and political advantage. Current favorite to win this icy crown was Lady Clementine Fitzroy, a diamond of the first water whose beauty was matched only by her profound arrogance. But Alistair had not come to London this season for a wife. He had come to launch his younger sister, Lady Georgiana Cavendish. Georgiana was the only crack in the Duke's impenetrable armor. She was 18, possessing the dark Cavendish hair and startling blue eyes, but she possessed none of her brother's iron spine. A childhood bout of scarlet fever had left her frail, and a subsequent riding accident had resulted in a permanent, slight limp. In the brutal arena of London society, any deviation from perfection was blood in the water. Georgiana was agonizingly shy, terrified of crowds, and desperately eager to please a society that was already sharpening its knives against her. It was the highly anticipated Duchess of Devonshire's opening ball at Piccadilly, a colossal affair attended by everyone from Beau Brummel to foreign dignitaries. The sprawling mansion was ablaze with thousands of wax candles, the air thick with the scent of crushed roses, heavy perfumes, and the sharp tang of ambition. Clara stood by a massive marble pillar in the corner of the grand ballroom, her drab olive gown blending seamlessly with the shadows. She watched the room with the practiced eye of a seasoned spectator. Across the floor, she spotted the Duke of Rothmere. He stood near the terrace doors, a stark figure in impeccable black evening wear, his broad shoulders tense as he conversed with the Earl of Liverpool. He looked imposing, dangerous, and utterly detached from the swirling dancers. Then, Clara's gaze shifted to the dance floor, and her heart gave a rare, empathetic twinge. Lady Georgiana had been coerced into taking the floor for a country dance by a well-meaning but oblivious cousin. The girl looked as though she were walking to the guillotine. Her gown, an overly elaborate creation of heavy pink satin chosen by an ambitious modist, overwhelmed her slight frame. With every step, her slight limp was accentuated. Clara could see the flush of mortification creeping up Georgiana's neck. Worse, Clara could see the predators circling. Standing by the orchestra, fanning herself with a spray of painted peacock feathers, was Lady Clementine Fitzroy. Flanked by her usual court of sycophants, Clementine's gaze was fixed on the stumbling Georgiana. Clara recognized the cruel smirk playing on Clementine's lips. She had seen it before, usually right before the debutante orchestrated the social ruin of a rival. Clara took a sip of her tepid lemonade. It was none of her business. The Cavendishes were aristocrats of the highest order. They lived in a world of wealth and power Clara could barely fathom. The Duke of Rothmere would surely step in if things went awry. She glanced back toward the terrace doors. Alistair Cavendish was gone, likely retreated to the card room or a private study to discuss tariffs and treaties. He had left his vulnerable sister entirely alone in the lion's den. The music swelled, and Clara felt a heavy sense of foreboding settle in her chest. The invisible girl adjusted her gloves, her eyes locked on the unfolding tragedy, completely unaware that her own life of quiet observation was about to come to a violent end. The climax of the country dance was chaotic, requiring the couples to form lines and weave through one another at a brisk pace. For a practiced dancer, it was a dizzying display of grace. For Lady Georgiana, it was a nightmare. Sweat beaded on the young girl's brow as she desperately tried to keep time, her limp throwing off her rhythm. As the lines collapsed and reformed, Georgiana lost her footing. She stumbled backward, her heavy satin heel catching on the hem of a gown behind her. There was a sickening, audible rip. The music seemed to falter, though the orchestra continued to play. A breathless hush radiated outward from the center of the room. Georgiana scrambled to right herself, her face draining of all color. She turned to see the damage. Standing before her, her face a mask of calculated fury, was Lady Clementine Fitzroy. A massive tear marred the exquisite, custom-made Honiton lace of Clementine's ethereal white gown. "I am so terribly sorry," Georgiana stammered, her voice trembling so violently she could barely form the words. She dropped into a clumsy, panic-stricken curtsy. "Please, forgive me. I lost my footing." Clementine did not move. She looked down at her ruined gown and then slowly, deliberately, raised her cold blue eyes to Georgiana's terrified face. The crowd around them had stopped dancing entirely, forming a tight, suffocating ring of onlookers eager for blood. "Forgive you?" Clementine's voice carried over the quiet murmurs, sweet as poisoned honey. "Whatever for? One cannot blame a lame horse for stumbling in a race it never should have been entered into." A collective gasp rippled through the onlookers. Several women hid smiles behind their fans. Tears welled instantly in Georgiana's eyes, spilling over her pale cheeks. She shrank back, looking desperately around the crowd for her brother. But the Duke was nowhere to be seen. "I truly did not mean—" "Of course you didn't mean it," Clementine interrupted, taking a step forward and backing Georgiana against the unyielding bodies of the crowd. "You simply do not belong here, Lady Georgiana. It is a pity your brother's vast wealth cannot purchase you a modicum of grace. Or perhaps he simply does not care enough to supervise you. After all, what is an embarrassing, crippled little mouse to a man like the Duke of Rothmere?" Georgiana let out a soft, broken sob, burying her face in her gloved hands. It was the ultimate humiliation, a public slaughter of her character and her deepest insecurities, delivered with ruthless precision. From the shadows of the marble pillar, Clara Danvers felt something inside her snap. It was not a conscious decision. Clara despised confrontation. She had spent a decade making herself small, silent, and safe. But the sight of the cruel aristocratic bully tearing down a terrified girl who could not defend herself ignited a dormant, white-hot fury in her chest. She had seen the Tun destroy gentle souls before, but she refused to watch it happen tonight. Before her logical mind could stop her, Clara stepped away from the wall. She pushed through the crowd, her plain olive gown brushing against silks and satins. The onlookers parted in sheer confusion, wondering who this drab stranger was and why she was interrupting the spectacle. Clara stepped directly between Lady Clementine and the weeping Georgiana, turning her back to the weeping girl to face the tyrant. "Lady Clementine," Clara said, her voice completely devoid of the tremor she felt in her hands. It was clear, calm, and carried a dangerous authority. "How unfortunate that your exquisite lace has been torn, though it is far less unfortunate than a public display of such profound vulgarity." Clementine blinked, genuinely startled. She looked Clara up and down, her lip curling in disdain at the outdated fashion. "And who, exactly, are you?"
"I am someone who observes," Clara replied smoothly, stepping closer to Clementine, invading her space. "And I observe that you are berating a young woman for a clumsy accident. An accident, I might add, that could have happened to anyone."
"She is an imposition on society," Clementine sneered, recovering her bravado. "And you, whoever you are interrupting."
"Am I?"
Clara tilted her head, her hazel eyes locking onto Clementine's with terrifying intensity. She lowered her voice, but not enough to keep the nearest gossips from hearing. "How curious that you speak of impositions and belonging, Lady Clementine. One would think you would be more charitable toward those navigating difficult waters, considering the turbulence your own family recently faced. Or has society already forgotten about your brother's disastrous holiday in Brighton, the one involving the magistrate, the forged promissory notes, and the sudden silent payment of £3,000 to a certain Mr. Davies?" The color drained from Clementine's face so fast she looked like a wax figure. The whispers in the crowd instantly changed frequency, morphing from malicious amusement at Georgiana into a feverish, scandalized, buzzing, directed entirely at Clementine.
"You lie,"
Clementine hissed, but her eyes darted nervously to the crowd.
"I never lie," Clara said softly, her posture impossibly straight. "And I would suggest that if you wish to secure a certain Duke's favor, you would do well to remember that he values loyalty above all things.
Publicly humiliating his sister is an exceptionally poor strategy for a hopeful bride. Now, I believe you require a seamstress. Good evening." Clara turned her back on the stunned, humiliated diamond of the first water. She reached out, gently wrapping her arm around Georgiana's trembling shoulders.
"Come, my lady. The air in here has grown incredibly stale. Let us find you some lemonade."
As Clara guided the sobbing girl through the parting sea of aristocrats, she did not notice the tall, imposing figure standing at the edge of the crowd. Alistair Cavendish had returned from the card room just in time to see the confrontation. He had watched, frozen in a rare state of shock, as the drab, unremarkable woman stepped in front of his sister like a shield. He had heard the cool, devastating precision with which she had dismantled Clementine Fitzroy, using a secret Alistair himself only vaguely knew about. As Clara walked past him, her eyes focused entirely on comforting Georgiana, Alistair felt a strange, violent jolt in his chest. The ice that had surrounded his heart for years seemed to crack. He turned to his closest confidant, Lord Simon Croft, who was staring at Clara with equal bewilderment.
Croft, the Duke murmured, his voice a low, dangerous rumble. Who is she?
That? Croft blinked. I believe that is Miss Danvers, Viscount Danvers' daughter, a wallflower, entirely unremarkable.
Alistair watched Clara's retreating form, a fierce, predatory gleam entering his dark eyes.
Unremarkable?
He repeated softly. No, Croft.
I believe she is the most dangerous creature in this room. The morning after the Duchess of Devonshire's ball, the atmosphere in Mayfair was thick enough to carve with a silver butter knife. The drawing rooms of London buzzed with a singular, scandalous narrative. Lady Clementine Fitzroy, the untouchable diamond of the season, had been utterly dismantled by a ghost in olive drab silk. In the modest, drafty townhouse of Viscount Danvers on Half Moon Street, however, the mood was not one of victory. It was one of impending doom.
You have ruined us, Mrs. Agatha Linfield shrieked, pacing the threadbare Persian rug of the morning room. Clara's aunt clutched a crumpled copy of the Morning Chronicle to her chest as if it were a shield against poverty. Viscountess Castlereagh's maid told Mrs. Higgins' cook, who told our scullery maid, that you accosted Lady Clementine. You threatened her with some absurd fiction about her brother.
It was not a fiction, Aunt Agatha, Clara said calmly, taking a deliberate sip of her black tea. She sat perfectly straight, though her pulse drummed a frantic rhythm against her ribs. Lord Arthur Fitzroy forged a magistrate's signature to cover his gambling debts in Brighton. I merely reminded Lady Clementine that those in glass houses ought not to throw stones at frightened girls.
You intervened in the affairs of the Duke of Rothmere, Agatha gasped, her face turning an alarming shade of plum. You, a penniless wallflower whose father is hiding in Cornwall to avoid his creditors. Society will exile us. Lady Jersey will cross our names from the Almack's voucher list by noon. I am sending you away, Clara, today. You shall go to Yorkshire and live with Cousin Maud. You can darn her stockings and rot on the moors, for you are dead to polite society. Clara lowered her teacup. A cold dread settled in her stomach, but she did not let her composure fracture. Yorkshire meant isolation, poverty, and the end of her quiet, independent life in the shadows of London. But as she pictured Georgiana's terrified, tear-streaked face from the night before, Clara knew she would not take the words back. Meanwhile, miles away in the opulent masculine sanctity of White's Club on Street, James's Street, Alistair Cavendish sat in a leather wingback chair, ignoring the prominent politicians vying for his attention. She is entirely unremarkable on paper, Lord Simon Croft was saying, flipping through a small leather-bound notebook. Croft, besides being the Duke's closest friend, was also his most efficient gatherer of intelligence. Clara Danvers, 23. Father is Viscount Danvers, an utter failure of a peer who has all but abandoned her to a draconian aunt. No dowry, no connections, no scandals of her own. And yet, Alistair mused, staring into the hearth fire, she possesses an intelligence network that rivals the Home Office. The Brighton incident regarding Fitzroy's brother was buried by the Crown itself to prevent a panic. How did a wallflower uncover it?
By being invisible, Croft replied with a shrug. Servants talk. Careless lords whisper in corners, believing no one of consequence is listening.
Miss Danvers, it seems, has been listening to everything. Alistair's jaw tightened. He had returned to his townhouse late last night to find Georgiana still awake, clutching a cup of milk and looking more peaceful than she had all season. When he asked her what had happened, she had poured out the story of her clumsy mistake, Clementine's cruelty, and the fierce, protective stranger who had stepped in front of her like a guardian angel.
She did not even know me, Alistair, Georgiana had whispered, her eyes shining with unshed tears of gratitude. But she fought for me when no one else would.
Alistair stood up, his towering frame casting a long shadow
across the club's carpet. Send a message to my stables, Croft. Have the carriage brought around.
Where are we going?
To Half Moon Street, Alistair said, his voice hard and resolute. I have a debt to repay and a proposition to make. When the grand black carriage bearing the ducal crest of Rothmere pulled up to the Danvers townhouse, the entire street seemed to stop breathing. Inside, Aunt Agatha nearly fainted into the fireplace when the butler announced the visitor. Alistair did not wait to be invited into the drawing room. He strode in like a conquering general, his dark, commanding presence instantly making the room feel impossibly small. He ignored the sputtering Aunt Agatha entirely, his piercing gaze locking onto Clara, who had risen from her chair, her hazel eyes wide with genuine shock. "Miss Danvers," Alistair said, his voice a low velvet rumble that sent an involuntary shiver down Clara's spine. "Your grace," Clara replied, dropping into a flawless, unhurried curtsy. "To what do we owe this unexpected, overwhelming honor?" "I am here on business," Alistair stated, stripping off his leather driving gloves. "Mrs. Linfield, you will leave us now." Agatha opened her mouth to protest the sheer impropriety of leaving an unmarried girl alone with a man. But one look at the Duke's glacial expression sent her scurrying from the room like a frightened mouse. When the heavy oak doors clicked shut, silence descended. Alistair walked slowly around the perimeter of the room, observing Clara just as she had observed him from the edges of 100 ballrooms. "You are being banished to Yorkshire," Alistair said, abruptly. "It was not a question," Clara stiffened. "Your intelligence network is very fast, Your Grace. My sister is alive this morning because of you, Miss Danvers," Alistair said, stopping a few feet in front of her. The ice in his eyes was replaced by an intense, burning curiosity. "Lady Clementine intended to break her spirit entirely. You stopped it. You wielded a state secret, like a dagger, to protect a girl you do not know. Why?"
"Because cruelty offends me," Clara said simply, holding his gaze despite the intimidating proximity. "And because Lady Georgiana is gentle.
Society forgives much, Your Grace, but it never forgives gentleness." Alistair stared at her. For the first time in a decade, the Duke of Rothmere was caught off guard. She wasn't trembling. She wasn't fluttering her eyelashes or trying to impress him. She was simply stating a brutal truth about their world.
"You protected my blood," Alistair said, his tone softening imperceptibly. "For that, you have the protection of the Cavendish family. But I require more from you, Miss Danvers. Georgiana needs a sponsor who is immune to intimidation, a companion who sees the traps before they are sprung."
"You want to hire me?" Clara asked, a wry, humorless smile touching her lips.
"Your Grace, I am ruined. By tomorrow, no respectable lady will associate with me."
"They will, if you are under my protection." Alistair stepped closer, the scent of bergamot and crisp winter air wrapping around her.
"I propose a pact, Miss Danvers. You will serve as Georgiana's companion and social strategist. In exchange, I will pay your family's debts, silence your odious aunt, and provide you with a dowry that guarantees your independence."
"And how, exactly, will you force society to accept a ruined wallflower acting as your sister's guardian?" Clara challenged, her heart beating wildly. Alistair's lips curved into a dangerous, devastating smirk. "By courting you, of course. Let us see Lady Clementine attempt to insult the future Duchess of Rothmere." The transformation of Clara Danvers was not an overnight miracle of fairy tale proportions, but rather a calculated, strategic campaign masterminded by the Duke of Rothmere. Alistair did not attempt to turn Clara into a flashy, glittering diamond. To do so would be entirely false to her nature. Instead, through the discreet delivery of heavy trunks from Madame Celeste, London's most exclusive modista, billed as gifts from Lady Georgiana Clara's wardrobe, was elevated to an art form. The drab mustards and olive greens were burned,
In their place came rich jewel tones, deep sapphire blues that made her pale skin glow, emerald greens that brought out the fire in her hazel eyes, and exquisite burgundy silks that moved like liquid. When Clara made her first public appearance at the theater in Covent Garden, seated in the Duke of Rothmere's private box, the shockwave that hit London society was seismic. Alistair sat beside her, leaning in to whisper in her ear, his dark head bent toward hers in a display of intimacy that sent the gossip columns into a frenzy. Clara, terrified but outwardly composed, smiled at his dry, biting commentary regarding the actors on stage. "You are trembling, Miss Danvers," Alistair murmured quietly, under the cover of the swelling orchestra. "I am unused to being the center of the target." "Your grace," Clara whispered back, her eyes fixed on the stage, though she could feel 100 opera glasses pointed at their box. "I much prefer holding the bow." "You have nothing to fear," Alistair said, and to Clara's profound shock, he reached out and briefly, reassuringly, covered her gloved hand with his own. His touch was warm, grounding. "I am the shield. Let them stare." The fake courtship was a masterpiece of societal manipulation. They promenaded in Hyde Park during the fashionable hour of 5 o'clock. Alistair, who famously despised the Prince Regent's flamboyant events, escorted Clara and Georgiana to a private garden party at Carlton House. He danced with Clara a scandalous, intimate waltz, proving to the ton that the untouchable Ice Duke had finally been melted. Georgiana flourished under Clara's protection. Clara taught the young girl how to navigate conversations, how to use a fan to deflect unwanted attention, and most importantly, how to recognize the subtle cruelty of the ton and rise above it. For the first time, Georgiana laughed in public, but as the weeks bled into the height of the London season, the boundaries of the pact began to dangerously blur. Clara found herself anticipating Alistair's visits not out of duty, but out of a desperate, fluttering hunger. She loved his sharp intellect, the rare, genuine smiles he reserved only for her and his sister, and the fierce, unwavering loyalty he possessed. Alistair, in turn, found himself utterly captivated. He would invite Clara into his sprawling library at Rothmere House, ostensibly to discuss social strategy, only to spend hours debating history, philosophy, and politics. He realized, with a jolt of pure terror, that he no longer wanted a fake courtship. He wanted the wallflower. He wanted her brilliant mind, her fearless heart, and her quiet strength by his side forever. However, a cornered viper is always the most deadly. Lady Clementine Fitzroy had not taken her defeat quietly. The sudden elevation of Clara Danvers, the very woman who had humiliated her, 'twas a poison in Clementine's veins. She knew the Duke was too intelligent to fall for a penniless nobody without a reason. There had to be a secret. Clementine enlisted the help of Lord Thomas Beresford, a destitute aristocrat with a talent for unearthing filth in exchange for coin. For 3 weeks, Beresford dug into the obscure, impoverished history of the Danvers family. 2 days before the grand climax of the season, the highly exclusive masquerade ball at Vauxhall Gardens, Beresford struck gold. Clara was alone in the drawing room of Half Moon Street, reading a volume of poetry Alistair had lent her, when a heavy, cream-colored envelope was delivered via a street urchin. There was no return address. Clara broke the wax seal, her stomach knotting with an inexplicable dread. The handwriting was elegant, jagged, and entirely unfamiliar. "Miss Danvers, how easily society forgets the sins of the father when the daughter is draped in Rothmere gold. But the crown does not forgive treason. Viscount Danvers has not been hiding from creditors in Cornwall. He has been actively financing a smuggling ring, moving French brandy and weapons across the channel to pay his debts. I have the ledgers. I have the sworn testimonies of 2 captured smugglers. If you do not break off your arrangement with the Duke of Rothmere and depart London by tomorrow night, I shall deliver these documents to the magistrate at the Vauxhall masquerade. Your father will hang for treason, and your precious Duke, whose political power relies on his unblemished reputation, will be dragged down into the mud of your family's ruin. Leave him or destroy him. The choice is yours. The letter was unsigned, but Clara didn't need a signature to know it was Clementine's handiwork. The paper fluttered from Clara's numb fingers, landing softly on the Persian rug. The air in the room felt impossibly thin. Treason. It wasn't just debt. Her foolish, desperate father had engaged in treason. If this became public, Alistair's political enemies would seize upon it instantly. A duke courting the daughter of a traitor? His influence in the House of Lords would evaporate. His reputation would be destroyed. And Georgiana, sweet, fragile Georgiana, would be collateral damage, tainted by association just as she was finally finding her footing. Clara closed her eyes, a single, hot tear slipping down her cheek. She loved him. She realized it in that devastating moment of clarity. She loved the Ice Duke with a fierce, consuming passion she had never thought herself capable of. And because she loved him, she had to break his heart. She stood up, her jaw set with the same iron resolve she had shown at the Devonshire ball. She walked to the writing desk, pulled out a sheet of cheap, unadorned paper, and began to write the lie that would end her life in society forever. She would tell Alistair she could not bear the pressure, that she found him suffocating, and that she was leaving for Yorkshire immediately. She would fall on her sword to keep his armor pristine. Clara did not flee to Yorkshire. To simply vanish would not satisfy the vipers. They would leak the ledgers out of spite. Instead, she donned a heavy, charcoal-gray domino cloak, concealing her face behind a plain, black velvet half-mask, and hired a discreet hackney carriage to Vauxhall Gardens. The Vauxhall masquerade was a dizzying, chaotic spectacle. Thousands of lanterns hung from the ancient elm trees, casting a surreal, golden glow over the throngs of aristocrats dressed as harlequins, mythical gods, and historical monarchs. The air was heavy with the scent of roasted almonds, expensive perfumes, and the sharp tang of gunpowder from the distant fireworks displays. It was a place of shadows and secrets, the perfect hunting ground for scandal. Clara navigated the labyrinthine gravel paths, her heart hammering a frantic rhythm against her ribs. The anonymous note had instructed her to bring a signed letter, completely severing her ties with the Duke of Rothmere and admitting to a fabricated, ruinous affair of her own, in exchange for the ledgers proving her father's treason. She reached the designated meeting place, a secluded, dimly lit marble pavilion at the far edge of the dark walk. Waiting in the shadows were two figures. Lady Clementine Fitzroy wore a glittering gown of silver tissue, her face hidden behind a mask of white feathers. Beside her stood Lord Thomas Beresford, holding a thick, leather-bound folio. "I must admit, Miss Danvers, I am almost disappointed," Clementine drawled, pulling off her mask to reveal her triumphant, cruel smile. "I thought a woman who dared to threaten me at a ball would put up more of a fight. But blood tells, does it not? You are just the pathetic daughter of a traitor." "I have the letter you requested," Clara said, her voice devoid of emotion, though her hands shook beneath her cloak. She withdrew the folded parchment from her pocket. "Give me the ledgers, Lady Clementine. And you have my word. I will be on the morning coach to Yorkshire, never to return." Beresford stepped forward, reaching for Clara's letter with a greedy smirk. He never touched it. From the dense, ivy-choked darkness behind the pavilion, a voice rang out a low, terrifying rumble that froze the blood in Clementine's veins. "I am afraid, Lord Beresford, that Miss Danvers will not be traveling to Yorkshire. The climate does not suit her." Alistair Cavendish, the Duke of Rothmere, stepped into the lantern light. He wore no mask. He was dressed in immaculate, severe black evening wear, his dark eyes burning with a lethal, suppressed fury. Flanking him, stepping silently out of the gloom, were four heavily muscled men who looked less like footmen and more like the seasoned Bow Street runners they were. Clara gasped, taking a stumbling step backward.
Alistair, no, you cannot be here. If they release those ledgers, they will release nothing, Alistair said smoothly, his eyes never leaving Clementine's horrified face.
He snapped his fingers. One of his men stepped forward and effortlessly wrested the leather folio from Lord Beresford's trembling hands, tossing it onto the marble floor.
You think me a fool, Lady Clementine? Alistair asked, his voice dripping with venom.
He closed the distance between them, towering over the cowering debutante.
Did you truly believe you could hire a drunken sycophant like Beresford to dig into the Danvers family without my intelligence network noticing? I have owned Beresford's gambling debts for 3 weeks. I knew about the smuggling ring before you even drafted that pathetic blackmail letter.
Clara stared at him, her mind reeling.
You knew? About my father?
Alistair turned to Clara, the terrifying harshness in his face softening instantly.
Of course I knew, Clara, and I dealt with it.
Viscount Danvers was quietly apprehended by Crown agents 3 days ago. Because of my service to the Home Office, the Crown permitted me to pay the fines levied against him. He has been exiled to a remote, inescapable estate in the Scottish Highlands. The smuggling ring is dismantled. The Crown considers the matter permanently closed and the documents sealed. What Lord Beresford holds is nothing but worthless copies. Clementine stumbled backward, her silver gown catching on the marble bench.
You paid a traitor's debts? You risk your own dukedom for a wallflower?
She is not a wallflower, Alistair snarled, stepping into Clementine's space, his voice dropping to a terrifying, deadly whisper.
She is the woman I intend to marry.
And if you, or Lord Beresford, ever breathe a single syllable of this to a living soul, I will not simply ruin you socially. I will uncover every dark, rotting secret your family has hidden for 3 generations, and I will print them on the front page of every broadsheet in London. You will be exiled to the continent, penniless and despised. Do you understand me?
Clementine, pale as a ghost and trembling violently, gave a frantic, jerky nod.
Beresford had already dropped to his knees in terror.
Leave this place, Alistair commanded, the ice returning to his voice.
If I see your face in London before the season ends, Lady Clementine, I will destroy you.
The two conspirators fled into the darkness, leaving Alistair and Clara alone in the echoing pavilion. The Duke dismissed his men with a curt nod, and they vanished back into the gardens.
Silence descended, broken only by the distant, muffled strains of a waltz. Clara stood frozen, the charcoal cloak heavy on her shoulders, tears finally spilling over her lashes.
Alistair crossed the marble floor and stopped before her.
Gently, with a reverence that made Clara's breath catch, he reached up and untied the velvet mask from her face, letting it fall away.
You were going to leave me, he said, his voice raw, stripped of its usual aristocratic armor. You were going to let me believe you did not care, to protect my reputation.
You are the Duke of Rothmere, Clara whispered, looking up into his dark, desperate eyes.
Your power, your influence, to help people like Georgiana, it relies on an unblemished name.
I could not let my father's sins drag you into the mud.
I love you too much to destroy you.
Alistair let out a ragged breath, closing his eyes for a fraction of a second before he reached out, pulling her firmly against his chest. His arms wrapped around her, solid and unyielding.
My power means absolutely nothing if I cannot use it to protect the woman who holds my heart, Alistair murmured into her hair.
I spent my entire life building walls of ice to keep the world out, Clara.
You walked straight through them.
You defended my sister when no one else would. You matched my intellect. You challenged my arrogance. You are the only true, genuine thing in this miserable society.
He pulled back, just enough,
to frame her face with his large, warm hands, his thumbs gently wiping away her tears.
"There will be no more hiding in the shadows, Miss Danvers," Alistair vowed, his gaze burning with absolute certainty.
"Tomorrow, I will post the banns. We will be married by the end of the month. And when you walk into a ballroom on my arm, the entire world will see the Duchess of Rothmere."
Clara looked at the ruthless, brilliant man who had turned London upside down just to keep her safe. The fear that had gripped her for days vanished, replaced by a profound, unshakable warmth.
"I believe," Clara said softly, a genuine smile finally breaking across her face, "that Lady Clementine will need a very strong cup of tea when she reads the Morning Post."
Alistair laughed a rare, deep, beautiful sound that echoed in the quiet pavilion. He leaned down, capturing her lips in a kiss that tasted of promises, power, and an eternal, unyielding love. The wallflower had finally bloomed, and the Ice Duke had found his fire.
What an explosive finale! From an invisible wallflower to the fiercely protected Duchess of Rothmere, Clara proved that true power lies in courage and loyalty, melting the Ice Duke's heart forever.
Did you love this twisty historical romance? Let me know your favorite moment and how satisfying it was to see Lady Clementine defeated in the comments below.
Don't forget to hit that like button, share this video with your friends, and subscribe to our channel for more breathtaking romantic dramas. Until next time, stay swept away.